On this episode of the BYO Nano Podcast, let's take an exploration into yeast. From fermentation through history to unlocking new secrets and strains, a world-renowned expert is here to share his insight and knowledge to give us all a better understanding of beer. This is John Hall, and welcome to episode 52. And a quick word on content. This show is for nano brewers, both existing and in planning. So tell us what you want to hear. What are the topics you want to learn more about? And what issues are you interested in? And who are the brewers you want to hear from? Email us at nano@byo.com. And a word of thanks to the show sponsors, and we hope you'll give them a closer look. Save the date and save $100. Registration is now open for the 2024 NanoCon Online, taking place on Friday, October 25th. Don't miss this full day of business and brewing strategies for running or launching a successful, small-scale, taproom-focused craft brewery. The seminars will be live and online, but you'll also have access to video replays of every session. Register now for the October 25th event, and you'll save $100. Visit nanocon.beer. And also, you can get access to hundreds of hours of on-demand videos covering small craft brewery strategies with BYO's new Nano Plus membership. Learn from craft beer experts, watching replays of past NanoCon seminars, plus a complete library of in-depth workshops. You'll also have full online access to all of BYO's digital content and an annual print magazine subscription. Check out byo.com/nanoplus for more details. And now, on to the show. Dr. Martin Zarnko is the head of research and development at the Research Center at Weinstephan for Brewing and Food Quality. He has traveled the world unlocking new information around yeast and fermentation. He's built a career around knowledge-based brewing and has helped new generations of brewers better understand fermentation science and history. He's also passionate about social aspects of beer drinking and how to best offer the best experience in the glass. He joined me from Germany via Zoom.
Yeah. Well, I'm appreciative of your time and for you being on this broadcast, and I can't think of anybody else that I could ask this question of and get the answer correct. But from your research, from your career, from your travels, how important is the relationship between alcohol and humans leading up to our current existence on this planet?
This is not that easy. So alcohol and human beings, alcohol and a lot of animals. I will not say they belong together. This is not right.
Okay.
But they have a long coexistence since a long, long time, and it started with a lot of fruits, with a lot of rotten fruits, where a little bit of alcohol was produced. We still have that. Yeah, if you, for example, eat an banana, which is a little bit too ripe, yeah, too long maturated, then you have alcohol inside. So it is a molecule which is in many, many areas of this world, very typical for us, the human beings, and in former times, and till now as well, for a few animals. We have a few apes which have the same enzyme systems as we have. So means enzyme systems that we can deal with alcohol a little bit better. Yeah, we are not too long drunk. So this is the one aspect. We have this coexistence. But I want to say something to beer and to alcoholic beverages before of that.
Okay.
The reason why we are producing that is really not only to be drunk. This is very important. Yeah, and in former times, over a long, long, long time, over thousands of years, we produced alcoholic beverages to have and save water. because of the alcohol, because of a low pH, because of this acidity, because of a little bit of CO2, not too much, because we haven't had the containers in the beginning, when mm-hmm. we started to produce. But if you have an atmospheric fermentation, then you get round about 1.6 gram per liter. Yeah, and regular beer has 5 gram per liter. It is not the same, but it's a little bit, and it makes your water safe. This is very important, and this safe water has been given as well to older people, to children, and so on, because the alcohol content was very, very low. This was a beer for the daily consumption, and it was cheap to produce, and this was the main aspect for this product. Because if you just go a little bit back into time, the time before the Cokes were introduced to the markets, before the soft drinks were introduced to the market, before coffee, tea, these wonderful hot drinks have been on the market, what has been the alternative? It's water. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And water where you are not really sure how the quality has been. Yeah. If you have surface water from a river, from a lake, and so on, there could be a lot of things. Yeah. And in hot areas where a lot of things started, like in the Middle East, in Egypt, in the Middle East, a lot of things with respect to our wonderful product, they started a lot. And there it has been, and it is still very, very hot. So a lot of things grow there, which are not good for us, pathogenous. Mm-hmm. So it's a sign for this very light wine and sour wine. It's to make water safe. So, I want to say it's... coming back to your question, what about alcohol in human beings? There has been alcohol since a long time. Yeah, a long time before we settled down. Yeah, a long time before we have had the Neolithic revolution. But it was not only to get drunk. Of course. To get drunk has been an aspect and motivation as well. But this has been a very special beer. To have this special communication, spiritual communication, to different gods and to former people and things like that. This has been another aspect. But the main aspect has been this consumption product, this very light beer, the beer to consume for everybody and daily.
Yeah. I wonder what when I'm fortunate to talk with academics and researchers and scientists, it takes a certain type of person to dedicate their lives to a subject. And for a lot of them, when I have conversations, there's sometimes an aha moment that led to a career. Sometimes it was an accidental find that led to a passion, that led to a career. What was it for you that led you on this path to where you are now as a scientist, as a researcher, as somebody who is as knowledgeable in your field as really anybody?
Interesting question, I think nobody asked me that before. I didn't know that I want to be a brewer since I'm 14, 15 years old. This was totally clear. And for me, it was very important to know that I want to do something. It gave me, it made me feel safe Yeah, when I was very young, that I do know what I'm doing in the future. But being a brewer was really, I only wanted to be that. Yes, I liked beer, but I liked beer, not alcohol. Yeah, I liked beer. This was this very special product, and it was a little bit mystic for me. And as I said before, you want to be a brewer, then you want to have a brewery. And everything else was a little bit by accident. I did not get a really good job in a brewery. I was not satisfied what the market was offering, and the market was not satisfied with me. Yeah, and however it worked. But I get an offer by the university, coming back to the university, and I said, okay, I can try it. And then I have seen, then I was the first time really confronted with research. Research in my topic, yeah, and yeah, it was great. this was sensational, yeah. Really to get in contact with these very special people, and as I said before, the brewers all over in the world are very nice, and the science brewers who are doing science, they are very special. And very nice as well, yeah. And our old teacher, Professor Ludwig Nazis, he unfortunately died one year before.
Okay.
And he said at a conference to young scientists in the mold and brewing sector, he said, "Congratulations, you choose the best sector ever. Yeah, great, great job. Yeah, great decision. But I tell you, the best job ever is to be a professor of the brewers."
Why is that?
I like that so much. And I tell you, he was getting 97, and I would say he died young. Yeah, because he was all the time in discussion, and from a positive perspective, in discussion, in talks, and in contact with young people, and that kept him young. Yeah, and this was really great to see, and this is what I for me, for us here as well, a privilege. Yeah, to have all the time young people which surrounds you and confront you with nice new questions and so on. And this was wonderful accident which happened, that I was getting a job here, which I did not expect. Yeah. And since 26 years, I tell you, I'm really happy with doing that. Yeah, met a lot of interesting persons, and especially in the last 10 years, yeah, with my very special colleague, Matthias Hutzle, where I'm going in yeast hunting, yeah, in countries like Georgia, not Georgia, US, Georgia,
right.
In the Caucasian area. And not only there, in a lot of areas and regions, we have been looking for yeasts, and this as well is a privilege to do that. It's great that it's allowed for us to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about your yeast hunting in a moment, but I'm curious about the young people asking you questions, and I'm going to paint with a broad brush here, but with so many breweries in existence right now, professional breweries in existence right now, and a good amount of textbooks and information available to them, or the way that ingredients are packaged and made to be used in a in sort of an easy or industrialized or commercial way. It's great that the young people are asking questions. Do you find that brewers, professional brewers, are still asking questions as well?
Yeah, They are doing that because in some cases it's going more and more complicated with respect to bureaucracy. You know, here in Germany or here in Europe, we have the European Union. So means a lot of countries bring their ideas, their tolls, their taxes, and so on, their laws to one city, to Brussels, and they melt it, they mix it together, and something new is been developed at the end, and you have to react on that. So there are so many questions. We have a specialist only at our institute who's just doing that. He's a brewer. He's an educated brewer, but he's really so good that a lot of lawyers and so on are asking him. And then not only the lawyers, of course, the brewers are asking them him as well. What is allowed? With respect to labeling and analytics and so on. So there are a lot of things which professional, big, well-educated brewers still have to ask. I see it with the consulting as well. And then a lot of things are changing. You have to understand, we have had these wonderful world wars here in Germany and a lot. And after the Second World War, the people, they first of all wanted to get feeded. And beer was part of that. They did not ask, is it this company or that company and so on. Just bring me a good beer and that I'm saturated and bring me something good to eat and so on. So these have been the first 15, 20 years and things then changed. Companies, brands were getting more and more have been of interest for the consumers and for these clients. And these things changed as well, because today a lot of people want to get very old and want to be healthy. I don't know what they exactly have as an target, maybe getting 120 and die healthy, something like that. But this is really what we see, and this aspect we can help in a lot of things with this product as well. Not with an alcoholic beverage. This is a very difficult and not that easy thing. A little bit of alcohol seems to be quite good. But not too much. Of course, not too much. But the alcohol-free beers, for example, they have a lot of fascinating things inside. And these are, for example, questions we do get from these brewers. Well, how can I produce a gluten-free product and purine-free product? Or think about other chronic diseases like diabetes, for example. And so on. And beer can answer a lot of these questions, or we can answer, and you can produce a kind of beer for that. So I think this is the direction of your question, isn't it?
I guess it's the importance of a brewer's curiosity for the evolution of beer, right? Because that's always been present, I imagine, in the people making beer.
You're absolutely right.
Beverages.
Brewers are so curious. And this is I'm sorry to interrupt you, but brewers are really so curious, and this is the reason why this science has been developed, because of the curiosity of the brewers. Because they observed something, and they could not explain that from a scientific point. But it has been in fact, when you are doing a mash, the mash is getting more dark and dark. Why is it getting dark? They could not explain in the beginning, but later on they could explain because of the Maillard reaction and so on. And this combination of this wonderful observation in the praxis and trying to explain that with scientific methods, this is brewing technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, this combination. And we in Weinstephan, we still offer an study which where you can be at the end and so-called Diplom Braumeister. Means you get something and diploma from the university, from the academia, but you are still a brewmaster. Yeah, you are a craftsman. Yeah, so science and praxis were coming together, and this has to do with the curiosity of the brewers.
I like that. So I want to ask you about yeast hunting, because it sounds exciting. It sounds like a grand adventure and fun for
it
history,
is.
fun for science. Okay, so I guess, how do you prepare for a yeast hunting expedition? And then what is it like when you're out in the world? Like, put us in your boots as you're doing this.
First of all, as always in the science, we have a hypothesis. Yeah, it because yes, you can go just outside your door and pick up some soil or some bark from any tree and taking some samples and looking on that. You can do that, but at the end, that takes a lot of time, and at the end you have maybe some confusing results, and it will take decades really to understand the connections between. So we have an hypothesis. Yeah, and or we have always two aspects. The second aspect is always if we find any yeast, and we find a lot of yeast, really a lot of. You have to know we guess that we have round about 1 million yeasts in the nature, but we just know 2,000 of them. This is nothing. Yeah. This is nothing. So I really can encourage everybody to do that. Yeah, because you will find something. So the second aspect is if we find any nice yeast which has some different, some special, some nice properties when it is fermenting our wort, then we do have a new product, a new yeast which we can sell very easy, yeah, because we are a company as well. We sell yeast as well, and we, of course, we look on a lot of things, yeah, because some of them do not ferment all the sugars, then they can be interesting for light beers, for alcohol-free beers. We are looking on and special always on the flavor. Maybe there's something very special. And I tell you, we have had never a yeast which does taste and smell bad. Never. All of them produced maybe sometimes too much of this fruity flavor or too much of this phenolic, but all in all, they produced well-known flavors. Sometimes not known from beer, but known from other fruits or other foods. And this is always a good story. So this is the second aspect. The first aspect is that our hypothesis is we want to know where is the origin of the bottom fermenting yeast. Why the bottom fermenting? Because the top fermenting, we do know a lot of things. Not all, but a lot of things. And the top fermenting yeast is genetically seen a little bit easier. The bottom fermenting yeast is way more complicated because it has had a mum and dad.
Right.
Yeah, it's a hybrid. And we still do not know where both of them were coming from. Yeah, this is really interesting. A lot of things have been really developed. Yeah, it started with findings in Argentina, in Patagonia, findings in the US, in Tibet, in Dublin, and so on. But we are not sure where it's really coming from. And the bottom fermenting yeast is the yeast for the most successful beer in the world. Round about 80% of the beers in the world which are produced are lager beers.
Yes.
Pale, filtrated, bottom fermented lager beers. Yeah, wherever you are in the world, you go in the restaurant, in the bar, and you order a beer, you will get a beer like that. You will not get a dark one. You will not get a wheat beer. And it will be a lager beer. Yeah, and this is interesting. Yeah, it's just an observation. Yeah. Yes, it's fascinating. And first of all, it does mean nothing for me. I'm not here to say that's it. Yeah, forget all the others. No, of course not. This is the real fascinating thing. But why? Why is it like that? And can we learn out of that? Yeah, what happened there? And we have had a lot of really interesting findings in the years where we were looking on that. So that we say today, we think we are not absolutely sure. It's I think you will not find anyone who really can be absolutely sure. But we think a very important situation has been 400 years before. Wait a minute, I have to count. Yes, 400 years before. Between 1602 and 1615 in the Munich Hofbräuhaus. This is as well a little bit by accident. Yeah, it has nothing to do because it's next to us. It is not next to us. But in this time, exactly in that time, the first time what we could found in the documents, because this is another part of our yeast hunting. It's not only going outside, it's going inside in the books as well. So when we find, this is the first time that we find in the documents that in one building, they produced a warm and then cold fermentation. They produce beers, warm fermented and cold fermented, and they were getting exactly in these years two new brewmasters, from Einbeck and from Schwarzenbach. Does not matter, but Einbeck was very, very, very famous at that time, and from Einbeck we got at the end the strong beers, the Bock beers. Yeah, there has been a consonant transition from E to O, from Beck to Bock. Yeah, and there is the Bock beer coming from Einbeck, and the brewmaster was exactly at that time in this Munich Hofbräuhaus and from another brewery. And from that, the former Bohemian, then Bavarian wheat beer was introduced to that brew house. And the very special thing is, later, very later, the yeast mixture of that brew house, it was always a mixture till 1883. The mixture was then spread later on by another famous person, Mr. Sedlmeier. Mm-hmm. He was the owner of the Spaten Brewery, which is still existing.
Yes.
And this guy, he spread this mixture to very other famous people like Emil Christian Hansen in Copenhagen. Yeah. And this guy, he invented the propagation of the yeast, the single propagation of the yeast, 1883, This is a reason why everything before was a mixture, and a lot of things after it, we stopped. Yeah, with this mixture, we stopped the evolution. But this is another story. And so this slurry, yeah, was then spread all over the world. So this is what we could find out, or which is our new hypothesis. And why, for example, Georgia? From Georgia, the hop was coming. And the hop is the indication for the lager beers as well. I know today you add hop to stout, porter, wheat beer, all the ales, but not in former time. In former time, it was different. Yeah, and hop was not always used for beer making. No. By the way, hop was used for wine making, for meat making, for sourdough making, and not only for beer. Yeah, but hop was really hop, barley malt, and bottom fermenting yeast is the magic formula of a bottom fermented beer. This is the perfect marriage. Yeah, this is the secret behind. Yeah, Use these three ingredients, not wheat malt, yeah, not any other spice, not any other yeast. These three ingredients. Yeah. Long answer. Sorry.
No, but it's fascinating, and it's so. Again, so much of brewing has become fairly sterile or predictable in a lot of ways. So I love hearing about the research and hearing about the places that you're going and trying to put together the history, the past, to sort of give us a sense of where we are now.
And I tell you, it's from a modern perspective, it's really, we are more and more convinced that it is necessary that we are dealing with that topic. Because you said exactly something. Today, it's more sterile, yeah? Because we learned with respect to wonderful facilities, technologies, scientific aspects, what is about the hygienic situation. Yeah, from the microbiology, it's good for us. This is the most important invention of the mankind, of the human beings ever. Yeah, not the car, not the smartphone or things like that. It's the hygienic situation. So it's with respect to many people who teach us. And this has been very important for the brewers as well. For us today, it's really totally easy to produce a product which has 12-month shelf life. No problem, yeah? Not in former times. But in former times, we have had, with this mixture of yeast, we have had all the time an evolution. All the time there has been a fight, and the strongest, the dominant one was the winner, yeah? And all the time, the beers have been a little bit different to the beer the month before or the year before and so on. Today, we are able to produce in a wonderful way a reproducible product. This is what we learned, yeah? And from, I would say, this is not absolutely right when I say from we are coming from a little bit from a chaotic situation with respect to the mixture of yeasts and lactic acid bacteria. We got this wonderful invention of this propagation, so we get really reproducibility and safe systems and so on, and This is as well important, because since that time brands could develop, because they could be all the time as the producers want to have it. Yeah. And we were coming a little bit in a boring situation because we selected perfect strains. And at the end, worldwide, we used for the bottom fermenting. Yeah. At the end, worldwide, we were using only a few of them. So a lot of beers have been a little bit similar. These are the critics and I don't like this word for the industrial beers.
Okay.
I really don't like it, yeah, because this is an art to do that. Yeah, really to do all the time reproducible products. But this is something what they have to accept as well, that it was getting a little bit more, yeah, simple, bore, perfect beers, yeah,
Yeah.
but a little bit similar. Yeah, you from the US, you have had that in the 1970s. They were quite the same. And then you got this explosion, yeah. The craft industry was exploding, yeah. Of course, with different tastes and smells and colors and alcohol contents and so on, yeah. With respect to all the attributes which characterize beer, yeah. Great thing, what there happened, yeah. And we are more and more developing. A new creativity, a new variability, yeah, and but still with this wonderful technique to produce reproducible beers.
When you think about modern beer, craft beer, or whatever, that is in front of people, that people are consuming, that people are drinking, what would be your advice for brewers to communicate the aromas, the flavors, the beauty, the nature of yeast in the beers? Is that something that you've seen is communicated well? Does it need improvement? In some cases, I feel like it can be taken for granted. But I'm wondering about how you feel about how brewers talk to drinkers about the importance of yeast.
This is a very good question and a very good aspect. I have seen a lot of brewers who stopped thinking when the beer was transported out of their gate. Yeah, and then they a little bit they forgot it. Yeah, it was produced in a good way. They have been satisfied, and then yeah, bring it to the supermarket, bring it to the bars, and forget it. This is totally wrong, yeah. Because a lot of things you can do wrong then, yeah, with respect to heat treatment, light treatment, shaking, and so on. So you damage the product. Yeah, this is one aspect, and you have to explain the consumer why more about the product. Yeah, why have you done it like that? Yeah, and what is the story behind? And there's a lot of things what people still can learn. And one interesting aspect is, for example, the drinking glasses. Yeah, using I. Coming to your wonderful market, yeah. You are the country now since a long time, longer time, which have so many breweries, which are producing so many wonderful beers. Really, I'm not. this is very honest. This is great. What has happened and what is still happening in the U.S. What I say is a little bit. There's a but. When I'm talking in that way, there is always a but.
Yes.
The brewers, they care for wonderful beers, for wonderful containers, for perfect labels, for great names, and so on, but they do not care for the glasses. I'm really sorry to say that. And it, just a small look in a very small country in Europe, and this is Belgium. These are the guys where I really like to go. Very special for this aspect. You will never get an Westmalle or Orval in a restaurant in a wrong glass. Never.
Yeah.
It can happen that you're asking the waiter, I want to have this product to my food, and the waiter says, oh, this is really a perfect pairing. Yeah, you obviously have you have a good meaning and you understand a lot of these things. And I have this beer, but I cannot serve it because I do not have the right glass. I please choose another beer. And this is absolutely true that different kind of beers do smell different and do taste different in different kind of glasses. The wine guys are telling us, are teaching us this since decades and decades, and a lot of special beer glasses have been developed over this time. Yeah, but we still, in Germany as well, yeah, in Germany we have these special glasses, but sometimes the label is missing. Hey, why are you not proud of that? Put your label on it, yeah, on the glass, yeah, and you will see the complete sensation is different, yeah, and it's you have more communication with the product, yeah, and this is something where I say the brewers have still to learn that. I know this is a lot of money, but it's a good invested money.
That's a, I hope people are taking that to heart, because it is so important. And as somebody who drinks for fun and for for pleasure, having the right vessel for it is so, it just adds to the overall experience and shows that brewers care, or restaurants care, and bars care. I wanted to go back to something that you briefly said earlier, and when we were talking about yeast, and you brought up the gods, and history tells us, you know, some of the early brewers or people who were drinking fermented beverages saw this as a gift from the gods, and prayers to Ninkasi, and all of that exists. As science has, and research has, come into the forefront of what we understand about yeast, is there still a mystical quality to it all?
No, not to the yeast. To nothing in the process. The purity law, I'm just telling a little bit. The purity law has nothing, there's no sentence, no one word with respect to the yeast, yeah? And this is where a lot of people say, okay, the guys at that time, 500 years before, they have been not smart enough to know what it is. This is not true. We have words for yeast from Latin, yeah, and which are it starts really reproducible 1,000 years before, that they named it, and that they did understand what is the good aspect. They did not understand that there are enzymes which cut down and polymer, yeah. This is what we learned in really only a few decades before. But if you learned by your parents or by your masters this job, and this has been your job the whole day, and you have not been disturbed by any YouTube informations, by any newspapers, by anything else, yeah, because it was not existing. you have done your job. And I'm not talking only about making beer, making cheese, for example, or building bricks and so on. What I want to say is you have been a professional. And if you are making this process, you understand very easy after a while. If you take this foam, or if you take that, or you keep that slurry and put the new word to it, or put the foam in the new word, and this process will be more safe and better. The product is better, has a better stability. So I think I'm totally convinced that they have professionals, and that the mystic of the fermentation we lost since a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
But we could not name it. Yeah?
Right.
And this is what the science explained to us since 180 years. Yeah? Louis Pasteur, he told us, yes, these are enzymes, but the enzymes are arrested behind a membrane. Yeah? And this is a living cell. That it has been enzymes, the people didn't know before, yeah, a little bit, but there was a scientific fight. Are these enzymes just swimming in the wort or in this slurry of the yeast, or are they captured in this membrane which we are calling yeast cell? And this is what Pasteur told us, and so on. And so things. So we were getting step by step. We were getting more information and have this knowledge today. Yeah.
Where, as I'm mindful of your time, so to sort of wrap this up here, where is your knowledge curiosity taking you right now? Where are you putting your efforts for the immediate future to try to uncover something new or a new hypothesis that you're putting out there? What is driving your curiosity at the moment?
Yeah, there are a lot of things. The good story is that we are a lot of really good scientists here in Weihenstephan. So what I always liked here in Weihenstephan, it is a team. And it's not only Weihenstephan, it's the brewers are a team. We have a wonderful collaboration with Leuven in Belgium, with Cork in Ireland, and so on. Really, and this is great. So this, coming to your question, there are still a few aspects. We are really looking on why are yeasts flocculating? Why do we have sometimes filtrability problems or not? We still do not exactly know. It's a little bit the same with gushing. Sometimes we do have it, sometimes we do not. We do not to a perspective of 100% can explain that. So, but my very special topic, of course, the yeast hunting is still something. We are going to the Basque country this year, to between Spain and France, because there are a lot of untouched areas which are of a special interest of us. But I'm looking as well on these alternative molds. Yeah, like the unusual one. Yeah, barley is the most used one, then followed by wheat. If you do not mold it, then it's corn and rice and sorghum. But I'm looking on different other aspects, because we need diversity. We need that on the fields. Yeah, otherwise we will have really huge problems in the future. And we have a few really interesting candidates for that, and for special areas and so on. And this is what we always look for. And you do not have to forget, all of these ingredients are living ingredients. Yeah, like the cereals, like the yeast, like the hop, and of course these the other microorganisms. So things are changing, and this is where we have to react on. Not only react, the better would be if we do know the answers before. So then we can help the brewers.
I like that. This is a fascinating conversation that I wish we could continue for hours on end, but I hope you'll come back on the show and we can keep talking at another time. But I'm so grateful for your time, for your insight, for everything that that you've done for beer. And this is a real privilege to be talking with you. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was a pleasure for me as well, really.
Where are you putting your educational time and efforts today? What are you looking forward to learning more about? Tell us by emailing us at nano@byo.com. And you can also tag BYO on all of the various BYO social media channels. I'll also invite you to head over to byo.com/nanopodcast. There, you can subscribe to the newsletter, the magazine, and catch up with great pro brewing content. New episodes of this show are released on the 15th of every month, so subscribe now and never miss a show when it's released. And you can also do us a favor by leaving feedback on your podcast platform of choice or by emailing nano@byo.com or checking in with us on all of the BYO social media channels. As always, thanks to this episode's sponsors. You can get access to hundreds of hours of on-demand videos covering small craft brewery strategies with BYO's Nano Plus membership. Learn from craft beer experts, watching replays of past NanoCon seminars, plus a complete library of in-depth workshops. You'll also have full online access to all of BYO's digital content and an annual print magazine subscription. Check out byo.com/nanoplus for more details. And save the date and save $100. Registration is now open for the 2024 NanoCon Online, taking place Friday, October 25th. Don't miss this full day of business and brewing strategies for running or launching a successful, small-scale, taproom-focused craft brewery. The seminars will be live and online, and you'll also have access to video replays of every session. Register now for the October 25th event, and you'll save $100 by visiting nanocon.beer. I'm John Hall, and you can still find me weekly behind the microphone on the Drink Beer, Think Beer podcast from All About Beer. Find that where podcasts are found, and I hope you'll tune in. Our theme music was created by Scott McCampbell, and we thank him for that. And once again, be sure to check out byo.com/nanopodcast for all of your nano brewing needs. But for now, we wish you all the best for a small but successful brew day.